FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. It's Carrie Lutz, and the date is Monday, November 16th, 2015. Tragic events happened Friday and over the weekend in France, and it really makes you wonder what's going on. I mean, I thought ISIS was contained, but I guess the difference of opinion as to what the word contained means. Here to talk about what it really means and what you need to think about is John Rubino at dollarcollapse.com. John, how are you?
Hey, Carrie. Good to talk to you again. The Paris thing has so many interesting angles that it's hard to know where to begin. First of all, the political implications of this attack are potentially seismic, because already in Europe, the parties who were anti-immigration and to an extent anti-euro and in a lot of cases anti-austerity were rising in the polls and looking more and more like potential winners in the next set of elections.
Yeah.
So this is just going to give these guys added impetus going forward. So you're seeing the National Front, for instance, in France, which is what used to be, I think neo-Nazi is probably too strong a word, but they were way to the right, and there were a lot of racist elements, and they were accused of being neo-Nazis back in the day. But they've cleaned up their act, moderated to an extent, but they're still very much anti-immigrant now. And Marine Le Pen, the leader of that party, is now arguably the most popular politician in France. And so they're going to be real contenders in the next election. So let an anti-Euro party get elected in the second biggest economy in the Eurozone, and you've got a currency crisis right there, you know, in addition to everything else that's going on. And already in Portugal, they're installing an anti-austerity, to an extent, anti-Euro left-wing party in power there. So there was already a political earthquake beginning in Europe, and this is really going to accelerate the process. So that's one thing. And another interesting part of this story is the parallel with today's Europe and the Roman Empire in 300 to 400 AD. You know, back then, the Roman Empire was fairly stable. It had its issues, you know, including an ongoing inflation, a little bit of a currency crisis, borders that were hard to maintain because the empire was so huge. But the rise of the Huns in the West caused about 500,000 immigrants to show up on the Roman Empire's borders. And they decided to let most of them in, hoping to use them as soldiers and low-level workers. But there were just too many of them to assimilate in that way. So they ended up being kind of occupying armies rival political coalitions. And it threw the empire into chaos, made it vulnerable to external threats. And it wasn't long before Rome was sacked and the empire was divided into two pieces. And the eastern, the original part of the empire, was basically gone. And so Europe is looking at something like that right now, where it's got, a million Middle Eastern immigrants, refugees on its borders. And it's allowing a lot, if not all of them in, and it's suffering the same consequences already. You know, it's got so many people who disagree with the basic political and social constructs, the mores of traditional Europe, that and who aren't assimilating. And so it's got this huge problem. It's got a demographic problem. It's got a philosophical and political problem. It's only going to get worse as more and more people come in from the Middle East. And so it's not clear what the solution to that is either, because these people are being displaced in the Middle East in large part because of especially the U.S. foreign policy. But also, you know, Europe has contributed to the mess in the Middle East. And so it's kind of our fault that what is happening is happening. You know, the rise of ISIS is a direct result of our stupid foreign policy over there. Mm-hmm. So you've got a mess with a lot of different causes, many of which come back to Western foreign policy, and no real clear solutions. So I would say that Europe already had a fatal flaw in terms of the way the Eurozone was constructed. It was already going to spin out of control, even with a perfectly placid geopolitical situation in the world. But now that geopolitics has become an even bigger problem than finance, it's really not clear how any of this gets fixed. It looks like it's something that's on the verge of blowing up for several different reasons coming to a head all at once.
Yeah, not a good thing for sure. And like you said, no way out. And then look at the politics here, the political situation. Did that attack make the likelihood of Donald Trump being elected much more likely? Because you can't really separate the immigration issue from the terrorism issue. People have been warning about it for years and years. Now you have it in Europe. What's to stop it from happening here? We're importing tens of thousands of Syrians into the country for what?
Yeah. On the one hand, you can make the case that those are mostly the people who are running away from the kinds of terrorism that just happened in Paris. You know, they're by and large, 99.95% of them are not the cause of stuff like this. But they all look alike and sound alike to our guys at the border. And so you can't tell an ISIS soldier from a legitimate refugee. And so that presents a problem. And I don't know what the solution to the problem is, because whatever you choose in a situation like this, there are extreme downsides. There are big risks. There are moral quandaries. And so there's not a perfect solution that we can all just sit down and hammer out and put in place and have the world go back to being this, you know, the placid place that we remember it being in our younger years. And so, there isn't a solution. And we're going to take a lot of Middle Eastern refugees, which, you know, you could make the case again that since their problems are largely our fault, or at least partially our fault, that we should take some. But on the other hand, that's importing trouble at the same time. Mm-hmm. And so it does strengthen the argument of the anti-immigration, or at least anti-illegal immigration, part of the political spectrum. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we already had a really difficult argument to make one way or the other over immigration. And this is just going to make it more complicated and much harder to come to some kind of an agreement. You know, it's easy to say, oh, well, this is the compromise we'll have to work out. You know, we'll have guest workers, we'll have amnesty for the people who are already here, and then we'll just do a reset. But that doesn't play with a significant minority, maybe even a majority of the voting public. So we're not going to do that. And it's not clear what else you do otherwise, because we can't round up 15 million people and ship them back, some of whom are kids who are born here and who don't know anything else. You know, the moral issues there would be pretty outrageous. So I don't know. You know, I don't have a solution for our immigration issues in the U.S. and certainly not in Europe. You know, these guys kind of dug their own grave in Europe. And I think you could have seen it coming.
Sure.
You should have seen it coming. You know, there are, and a lot of people there did, but they were kind of shouted down as racists. But if you have a demographic problem, an aging population, and you try to solve that problem by importing young people from other parts of the world, you got to make sure you're taking them from a place where the culture is compatible with your culture. Because if you take millions of people all at once, they're not going to assimilate easily, because there are enough of them that they can have their own neighborhoods where they don't have to assimilate.
Yeah.
And, you know, the U.S., we had massive immigration for most of our history, but we mostly brought in Europeans who were, even if an Italian or a German spoke a different language, they were still European culturally in most ways. So they blended right in. Two generations, you get people like you and me, Kerry, you know, who are basically Americans before we're anything else. Yeah. And that's not the case in Europe right now. And so you can make the case that it's really too late demographically for them to do anything about it, because the people there are reproducing at rates that dwarf the reproduction rates of the locals, of the natives. And so if you stopped immigration cold in Europe right now, you would still get this massive demographic shift over the next 50 years until it isn't clear what elections would yield anymore there. But it probably wouldn't be like the people that are being elected right now, or that have been elected in the last 30 or 40 years. So, you know, you would never get a Margaret Thatcher in Europe.
No.
As it's evolving now demographically.
Definitely not. Yeah, this is it's very disconcerting. But I think security, regardless of what happens, has to start with the border being secured. Then you can figure out what to do with the ones that are here. Hopefully you can find the troublemakers and get rid of them. But there's no seriousness on the part of the government, whether it's Congress or the president, to really secure the border. So until that happens, I think we're ripe for the same type of situation that happened in Paris, and I hope not, but
yeah, that it seems, you know, that that's something that it's hard to believe everybody doesn't agree that the borders should be secure, you know, because if a landmass doesn't secure its borders, then it's not really a country, right?
That's, you know,
that's one
Trump
of the definitions
says.
Of a country is
that's
a,
what Trump's
a,
been
a place
saying.
That controls its borders. So yeah, you're right, we should start there.
Yeah, so that's what Trump's been saying. I think, you know, I don't want to bring politics into it because we don't really talk about politics that much anyway, only in passing, but it's got to be a net positive for Trump and also a net negative against gun control because, you know, the people there were just sitting ducks. I'm not saying that they could have stopped it. I don't know. You know, it's hard to second guess that type of thing. But point is that, you know, something could have been done if more people were armed, perhaps, maybe not. Yeah, it's one of those things you can debate, but it's what's this going to come down to? Are we going to be fighting militant Islam in the streets? I mean, you know, is that what it's going to come down to?
Well, you know, that does make the case for gun ownership, because in a place where there's concealed carry and it's widespread, you can't get the kinds, or you shouldn't normally get the kinds of things where some guys with automatic rifles can just methodically walk around and shoot people in a big room, right?
Yeah.
Because you get 5 or 6 people with automatic pistol or semi-automatic pistols. You know, if they're carrying Glocks and that kind of thing starts, then you're going to have a firefight, which will end with the guys who started it being probably dead. You know, it'll still be a mess, but it will end more quickly. And so you could make the case that in a lot of the different kinds of gun violence that we've seen, that armed victims would have solved things a lot more quickly and you know, in a lot less brutal way than they ended up playing out. And so to the extent that more of this stuff happens, it strengthens the case of, you know, not just gun ownership being allowed, but in some cases being encouraged or even mandatory or something like that. You know, there are going to be politicians who say, you know what, we think everybody should be required to own a gun. And that would sound crazy in an election today, but 5 or 10 years from now might not sound so crazy, you know? And so it's going to really change the political landscape out there if this kind of stuff continues. And I think there's no doubt that it's going to continue.
And these guys, you know, we've seen these guys go crazy on colleges, and they appear to be Islamic motivated. And colleges in Texas, I know they've allow concealed carry on campus now. And that's all part of the trend here, John. Anyway, we've got to run, but find John's work over at dollarcollapse.com. Great article about the fall of the Roman Empire and the analogies, the similarities that can be drawn now. And while you're there, take a look at financialsurvivalnetwork.com. If I sound a little hoarse, I think I might be getting a cold for the first time in years, but I will fight it and I will still be on the air no matter what. And hey, just go over to financialsurvivalnetwork.com. John, we will talk to you next week.
Great. Thanks, Gary.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get 3 free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.